Hello and welcome to Rod Squad, the urology podcast for students. I'm Parker Adams and I'm going to do urology. Welcome to episode 60, which this is an interview with Hugo Embert on high-intensity focused ultrasound. Hugo Embert is the chief marketing officer. He's been that for about the last 5 years at EDAP TMS, a company that runs the Focal One high-intensity focused ultrasound system. So welcome, Hugo, to the podcast. Thank you for joining me. I'm excited to talk with you.
Thank you, Parker. Nice to be here.
So I'm going to start this interview out with, I did some reading and some research up until this point, so I think I have a basic understanding of what HIFU is, but if you didn't mind just doing a short description for our listeners to talk a little bit about what HIFU is and the treatment of prostate cancer.
Sure. HIFU stands for high intensity focused ultrasound. So it's a technology that is a few decades old. That the principle is to basically focus ultrasound waves into a single point to elevate the temperature, a little bit like you focus the rays of the sun with a magnifying glass in order to burn a leaf. Focused ultrasound work the same way. Instead of being the rays of the sun, you focus some ultrasound wave at a very high intensity, and at this focus point, you can really burn tissue. So the way we and HIFU are used in various fields in medicine, in the brain, in the liver. I mean, but in the prostate, the way our device work, we have a transrectal probe. So it's a small probe that is inserted in the rectum and that focuses those ultrasound waves through the rectal wall inside the prostate. By doing this and without any blade or without any incision, we can destroy tissue, ablate tissue inside the prostate very, very precisely. The individual HIFU lesion is about 5 millimeter high by 1.7 millimeters, so the size of a grain of rice, basically. Mm-hmm. And the way we work robotically, there's a motorized system that will move this probe step by step to accumulate, to stack those individual HIFU lesion next to each other in order to burn the part of the prostate that you've designed on the computer as the target area within the prostate.
Right. And it sounds like from what I was reading that the fall off temperature in surrounding areas is so abrupt that you lower your risk of injuring the rectum itself or the urethra per se. Is that true?
It's exactly correct. This is, as I said, it's extremely precise and extremely concentrated. And even a few millimeters, a couple of millimeters away from this focus point, you barely have any temperature elevation.
Interesting. And when I was reading about this, it looked like there was the thermal effects, which you were just describing, where you're heating up the temperature and causing this ablation of tissue. But it sounds like there's also these mechanical effects of cancer destruction. And I was curious if you could talk a little bit about the mechanical effects as well.
Yeah. So what happens is there's this ultrasound basically creates what we call cavitation. So it's little bubble of gas, if you want to make it simple. Then when they explode, basically by agitating, they mechanically move and create the collapse of cell walls.
Okay, that's kind of what I was reading, but it's helpful to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, and basically it's a principle of coagulation necrosis that happens immediately. And as usual, it slowly turns into fibrosis in a couple of weeks. So if you take a sample, the tissue is 2-3 weeks after, the tissue is completely dead.
Okay. And then just to better understand this procedure as a whole, like how long does it take, the procedure itself? Where do you do this? Do you do this outpatient or do you do this in the in surgery, or and what does the recovery time look like?
So it's a complete outpatient procedure. Patients arrive in the morning. They get to they get prepped. Here in the U.S., I think the vast majority of patients are under general anesthesia during the procedure. In Europe, there are places that only use spinal anesthesia, and it's okay. It's about an hour 15 minutes of procedure, and the patient can go home a couple of hours later. The patient goes home with a Foley catheter that is a couple of days later when he's at home. The recovery is extremely fast, and patients are back to their normal activity within a few days.
Okay. And then how available is HIFU across the United States specifically? If a patient wants this, how far are they going to have to travel to get it?
So that's a good question. Our device, the Focal One, is available in about 15 of the top academic centers throughout the country. So you have to look up which of those are offering this. And otherwise, right, there are more and more options. There are more and more service providers that bring device to more local hospitals or surgery centers. So it's becoming more and more widely available, especially since January 1st this year. There's a CPT code that is now effective, created by the AMA, that makes it possible for physicians and hospitals to request the payment from either Medicare or commercial insurances.
Okay. And that's helpful to know. So my next group of questions starts to dive into kind of the meat of, management choices and how to choose HIFU over other treatment modalities. So who are the ideal patients for HIFU?
So if you read the various consensus of urologists, it's the sweet spot is a low to intermediate risk patients that have a well identified and identifiable lesion on MRI and confirmed with biopsies, ideally MRI guided biopsies. And the other type of patients also is the patients that have a recurrence of their prostate cancer after radiotherapy. That's another patient population that even the NCCN guidelines included this in their latest versions of the guidelines. They recommend high intensity focused ultrasound as one of the options potentially for patients that have a recurrence following a radiotherapy.
So what I hear you saying is that if you have localized disease, the number that I saw was if you have a Gleason score under 6 and it's localized to a little nodule in the prostate, that's a great candidate for this HIFU therapy. And as well, there's another population where salvage therapy can be used after radiation therapy. I was also reading that you could do this after radical prostatectomy or hormone ablation. What do you think about that?
So just to correct you a little bit, it's 6 and 7. So Gleason 6 and 7, intermediate risk at Gleason 7. And they constitute according to all the consensus and the publications, a good patient population for HIFU. After radical prostatectomy, there's barely any prostate remaining. So there are a few series from Europe right now, because HIFU has been available in Europe for far longer than in the US, so they've accumulated more clinical experience. And you can see published in the literature a few series of patients with a recurrence after radical prostatectomy, where there's an MRI positive at basically at the level of the anastomosis, and a little bit of a tissue target that looks like a small prostate that some people have treated with HIFU. You have to understand, and that's really important. You have to understand the FDA cleared our technology for the ablation of prostate tissue. They didn't clear it for the treatment of prostate cancer or recurrent prostate cancer, primary or after this or after that. They really kept it as a ablation of prostate tissue, and basically the physicians use it and decide what type of patients they want to target that prostate tissue for.
Okay. So do you think that HIFU has a role with unilateral low-grade prostate cancer, like a Gleason score of 4 on a unilateral side?
That's the debate, I would say, right now. So Gleason 3 plus 4, Gleason 4 plus 3 seems to be the ideal candidate. Some centers start to treat Gleason 8, so 4 plus 4. A very very localized identified lesion on one side. The debate is still out there, and I'm not sure there are enough follow-up yet on those patients. The Gleason 6, Gleason 7, there are numerous publications now with thousands of patients and up to 8-10 years of follow-up that really give a clear picture of what to expect and the clinical efficacy of HIFU.
Okay. And in the couple of review articles that I was reading, they did mention some rather strange applications of this. And I didn't know where the research stands right now, but one of the references I saw was debulking of advanced disease and using HIFU for a debulking procedure. What do you know about this, or what role do you think HIFU has in debulking advanced disease?
So there are a lot of IDs that are coming from this. Some of them have had a proof of concept study where they treated a few patients with advanced disease, even T4 patients that have had a local treatment with HIFU in combination with a systemic treatment.
Mm-hmm.
There's no official statement and positioning on this. I'm pretty sure there's going to be more and more studies in that. A combination of HIFU with other therapies in locally advanced disease, but right now it's a bit early, I would say.
Okay, and one
of the big values, I think, in the local disease is prostate cancer is one of the only cancers where to treat a spot you have to remove the whole organ. Most of the cancers, when you look at breast cancer, liver cancer, and so forth and so on, you're able to, I mean, typically breast cancer, you move from mastectomy to lumpectomy, and now it doesn't seem realistic to remove the whole breast if you have a small lump identified. This is the way prostate is going thanks to HIFU.
Yeah.
We're moving from taking the whole prostate out at all costs to analyzing better the cancer, stratifying better, grading the cancer appropriately thanks to MRI, thanks to micro ultrasound, thanks to guided biopsies, and being able to have a better customized treatment plan for the patient. And for those patients who have really a well-identified small spot of cancer on one side, makes sense to treat them with focal HIFU with barely any side effect, maintain the quality of life, and continue monitoring the rest of the prostate. And worst case scenario, cancer comes back on the rest of the prostate, all the options are still open. You can still redo a focal HIFU. You can do radical prostatectomy. There are more and more series of surgery after focal therapy. You can do radiotherapy as well. I mean, yeah, you've pretty much haven't burnt any bridge.
Right, right. So something I was reading was combining transurethral resection of the prostate, a TURP, with HIFU. And one of the conclusions that they made was that it is unclear whether it has oncologic outcomes any different, like combining TURP with HIFU. But there might be a decreased rate of acute urinary retention if you do a TURP in combination with the HIFU. What's your view and recommendation with combining these two?
Yeah, so that's a historical protocol. When HIFU started 20 plus years ago in Europe, HIFU was used to destroy, so ablate the whole prostate. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was no MRI, there was no guided biopsy, so you had these 12 core random biopsies, and basically if you choose HIFU, you had to treat the whole prostate. And at that time it was found, and there's been several publications on this, it was found that combining the TURP with the HIFU procedure led to less symptoms of obstruction. Because mm-hmm. at that time, the whole gland HIFU included the urethra. So you would burn the whole prostate, including the urethra. So that's when the idea of combining TURP and HIFU came.
Okay.
Nowadays, HIFU is used, especially in the US, to treat, to ablate, in the majority of cases, only half of the prostate or quarter of the prostate or the part of the prostate that really harbors the cancer. And in this case, it's very rarely combined with TURP because TURP does not have any benefit anymore. You barely have any irritative symptoms or obstruction symptoms after a focal HIFU since you're not burning the urethra anymore. You're sparing the urethra, you're sparing the neurovascular bundles, of course, the apex. So this kind of side effects are minimum.
Gotcha. So what I hear you saying is when they used to do whole gland ablation, combination with TURP would really help the post-op acute urinary retention. But now that it's transitioned to more of a focal therapy, there's really no use for a combination TURP.
That's correct. That's exactly it.
Okay. And then I guess, is there any circumstances now where you do whole gland ablation, or have you guys walked away from that completely?
So there are still indications where you would perform a whole gland ablation, typically for older patients or patients that are unfit for surgery for different reason, HIFU being less invasive and I would say a lighter procedure than a radical prostatectomy, for those kind of patients. Whole gland HIFU is a good option.
Gotcha. So for a patient that ideally would have a radical prostatectomy, if they're not able to because of whatever, their other diseases or something like that, a whole mm-hmm. gland ablation could be useful.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. All right. And then when is it ideal for a doctor to select HIFU over other procedures, whether that's other focal procedures or other surgeries or radiation, when considering all these modalities?
This has to be really discussed with the patients, and there are so many factors that come into play for this decision. That it depends on the age of the patient, how active the patient is, what the patient believes in, and what he favors between the quality of life. If he puts quality of life in front of everything, If he wants to, if he is very active, he wants to maintain continence, he wants to maintain his erectile function, it's more likely we'll start with a focal HIFU procedure. That's really a better option for those kind of patients.
Gotcha. Understanding that they may have to have a surgery down the line if you fail HIFU, or you might have to have multiple HIFU procedures.
There's a possibility down the line that you need a secondary HIFU. There's a possibility down the line that you may need a radical prostatectomy. Once again, the age, the comorbidities, the life expectancy of the patient, all this enters in the equation.
Gotcha. So could you talk a little bit about some of the limitations to HIFU? I was reading there's some prostate size, height, also calcifications in the treatment zone. Could you speak a little bit about things that would make HIFU less of a ideal option?
Yeah, so prostate size is one. I would say beyond prostate size, I would say the tumoral localization, because the probe and the ultrasound are generated from the rectum up. It's more efficient. It's easier to reach the posterior and lateral portion of the prostate, which is where 70-80% of the cancers are anyway. But if you have a patient with a large prostate, let's say you have a patient with a 80 gram prostate and a tumor that is located more on the anterior part of the prostate, that might be difficult for the HIFU to reach this. So this is why it's important to have an MRI or at least an ultrasound of the prostate prior to see where the tumor is located. If those kind of patients absolutely want a HIFU, in this case, you can perform a TURP a few months, 2-3 months before the procedure to downsize the prostate, or a hormone therapy to downsize the prostate and make the tumor reachable for the HIFU. Okay. The other one you mentioned is clearly the calcifications. So if you have a calcification in the prostate that really creates a shadow on the ultrasound image, there's a good chance that the HIFU will not reach beyond that calcification. So if that calcification is not in the area you want to treat, that's fine. But if it is in the area you want to treat, so if it is just in front of the cancer, for example, this will have to be removed with a TURP if the patient wants a HIFU procedure.
Gotcha. Okay. So you were saying that doing a TURP a few months beforehand can help decrease the size of the prostate,
correct,
help for better access to certain parts of the prostate. Mm-hmm. Does that include the apex, or doing a TURP a few months beforehand, does the HIFU still struggle to get to the apex?
So the apex is another point. If you have a tumor that is close to the apex, it's not a big problem for HIFU, especially with a focal one device, because it's so accurate that you can really carve well your ablation zone around the posterior of the apex. What could be an issue is if you have a tumor that extends in the anterior part of the apex. In this case, HIFU is not a good indication.
Okay. And I was reading that there's this TULSA that's starting to come out, this transurethral ultrasound ablation, which kind of fixes this problem of access to the anterior prostate. Could you talk a little bit about this transurethral ablation?
Yeah, I'd say that's a very good point. In this specific case, the transurethral approach is probably better for those rare anterior cases. Having said that, the transurethral approach does not reach very well the posterior part or it gets more difficult for it to reach the posterior part without risking heat elevation towards the rectum and the risk of creating a fistula. And the other major difference is that between a technology like Focal One and the technology like the TULSA is a MRI guided procedure. So during the whole procedure, the patient needs to be inside the MRI. So you install the patient inside the MRI, you make an MRI acquisition, you make all the planning, all the targeting while the patient is under anesthesia inside the MRI. Then you have the whole HIFU part then with a continuous MRI acquisition. So it's a far, I would say, longer procedure, and it's a procedure that is half between urology and radiology, interventional radiology.
Okay. And the next question I have is about the adverse outcomes from this procedure. And it sounds like what you were saying before, that whole gland ablation definitely increases your chance for stricture and whatever else. But could we talk a little bit about focal HIFU and the adverse outcomes that you're still seeing with this procedure?
Yeah, so there are now, we're extremely confident in the figures in terms of adverse events of focal HIFU, because there are now 10 or 20 different teams around the world that have published their 2, 3, 5, 10-year follow-up after focal HIFU. Some teams in the UK, some teams in France, in Germany, and more recently, towards the end of last year, there are several teams here in the US, University of Southern California, University of Miami, who published their initial series of 100 plus patients treated with focal HIFU, and they found the same rate of continence, which is the PAD-free continence is very close to 100%, is 95% to 100% depending on the series. So there's an excellent continence preservation, and the erectile function preservation, then again, it's higher than, I think the lowest series are in the 80%, and some of them are more than 90% sexual function preservation, evaluated with the IEF questionnaire. So it's clearly a extremely good quality of life preservation therapy.
Okay. And how would you, how long would you suggest having a Foley in after a HIFU procedure?
So then again, it depends on the teams. Here in the US, the standard seem to be around 3 to 5 days.
Okay.
There are places that remove it the next day or 2 days after the procedure, but the majority here in the U.S. seems to be 3 to 5 days.
Okay, and what are the rates of when you're doing it focally instead of like partial gland ablation instead of whole gland ablation? What are your rates of stricture and stenosis?
So partial gland ablation, stenosis, stricture are nearly zero.
Okay.
With whole gland ablation, I think the published literature is about 10%. 10% of obstructions, stenosis type of thing.
But that it sounds like that really drops off when doing a partial gland ablation.
Yeah, and it's very easy to understand. As soon as you do partial gland ablation and you don't burn the urethra, the rate of little side effect towards the irritative symptoms, strictures, obstruction, et cetera, is dropping dramatically.
Awesome. And one of the most interesting things I was reading about this was PSA, which started off as being used after resection to see, you know, the efficacy of your resection isn't that well, or isn't that reliable in HIFU treatment, because as I understand it, you're not taking out the whole prostate gland, so your PSA isn't going to drop to zero. You see like a 50 to 80% drop. So could you talk a little bit about PSA and its role after HIFU treatment?
Yeah, so for whole gland HIFU, PSA is extremely reliable. And if the PSA nadir, if after whole gland HIFU is below 0.5 or even below 0.3, you have a very, very high chance of cancer cure. If now for partial gland ablation, for focal HIFU, everything we've seen does not really make PSA very conclusive. Some teams have looked at PSA velocity, PSA doubling time. There doesn't seem to be any correlation between this and recurrences after focal HIFU. And this is why the majority of the teams that do focal HIFU still perform an MRI six months to 1 year after the focal therapy, and often a set of biopsies in the same 6 months to 1 year time frame after the HIFU.
Gotcha. And I was reading a little bit about the follow-up, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you get this, you know, multiparametric MRI, you get like 4 to 6 cores in the treated area about 3 to 6 months afterwards. And then you also do a multiparametric MRI like 1 to 2 years and 5 years afterwards with a targeted biopsy. And then they also recommend doing like a systematic biopsy 1 to 2 years and 5 years post-op. Is that kind of the same thing that you were thinking, or please correct me if I'm wrong?
Yeah, there's no real consensus, but some teams see the focal HIFU as bringing a patient with intermediate risk, so a patient really needs a therapy. It's taking out the cancer portion, and since you leave a part of the prostate, you still have to do some kind of active surveillance protocol,
right?
Maybe not as intense as a initial active surveillance protocol, but you're going to need to monitor this patient anyway. And that's the real paradigm shift with focal therapy. You really moved from I diagnose a cancer, I take out the organ, and hope that I didn't leave any piece of organ or I did the surgery on time. So you move from this efficacy at all cost to a I see where the cancer is located inside the organ. I treat that part of the organ and with a very, very limited side effects for the patient. So I favor the quality of life of the patient, but the patient still has the rest of the organ, so it still needs to be monitored.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for talking about that. And could you speak a little bit about like imaging modality? I mean, I've heard that multiparametric MRI is kind of the standard of care for follow up on these patients, but I also look that you can also use enhanced CT, enhanced contrast CT to evaluate these patients post op. What's your view on that?
So there are several modalities. Of course, you're totally right. MRI, multiparametric MRI, has become recently the standard in prostate cancer imaging. There are also some ultrasound modalities that are extremely promising. Micro ultrasound, so it's a 29 megahertz transrectal ultrasound, is now showing in different publications to be on par with MPMRI, with multiparametric MRI in sensitivity. And as far as post-HIFU's concern still needs to be validated, but seems to be promising as well to follow patients after HIFU. What has been used also a lot in the in Europe and more is contrast enhanced ultrasound.
Oh, that's what I meant to say. Yeah, contrast enhanced ultrasound, not CT.
Yes, contrast enhanced ultrasound. It's even used by some teams perioperatively. I think the teams at USC has even published a paper on this. So during the HIFU procedure, they inject this contrast agent, which is basically microbubbles, and they look at the prostate with ultrasound at a special frequency, which is the frequency of vibration of those bubbles. And they look at which part of the prostate has bubbles and which part of the prostate does not have bubbles. And therefore, this is the part that is effectively devascularized or effectively treated. And they can monitor more or less in real time inside the OR the ablation. It's still very preliminary, but that initial publication from USC seems to be very promising. And I know that teams in Europe also use this modality, contrast enhanced ultrasound. The FDA has not cleared the product for the prostate imaging. This microbubble contrast is used for liver, for cardiac imaging, but not officially for prostate.
Okay. So that might be an image follow-up imaging modality that we use in the future. Exactly. But right now it's still preliminary. Okay. And the next question I have is, you know, compared to other focal therapies, there's a lot out there. I was reading about some of them, laser, electroporation, brachytherapy, all these different ones. When you're looking at the outcomes of these different procedures, how does HIFU compare to them?
So for me, there are different groups of therapies, of energies used to ablate a portion of the prostate. Cryo and HIFU are the two modalities that have been used for a long time and that have accumulated a lot of clinical data. So for me, the picture is extremely clear on where cryo and HIFU stand in terms of cancer control, in terms of side effects, and also have evolved a lot in terms of technology and technique. I would really separate HIFU and cryo from everything else. All the other therapies, you mentioned TULSA earlier, irreversible electroporation, there are some microwave therapy, there are some radio frequency also, needles that are used here and there, laser. All these are, I would say, still in a very early stage. There's a few series of 10, 20 patients here and there that are published with 1 or 2 years follow-up. That's very interesting. I'm sure they all have their pros and cons, but it's far too early to know where they stand. Once again, HIFU and cryo both have, I don't know exactly for cryo, but HIFU, where we've treated, I don't know, maybe 80,000 patients between the various technologies that have been out there in the world. Cryo is probably same, maybe even more, maybe 100,000. So I would really separate those from everything else you mentioned. Even if I'm very interested to know where they stand in the future.
Definitely. And you brought up cryotherapy, and it's really interesting that you isolated it to, you know, HIFU and cryotherapy. So could you do your best to draw a picture for us medical students or residents or even practitioners of a patient that would fit really well for HIFU therapy versus a patient that would fit really well for cryo? And do those overlap completely, or what things distinguishes those two options?
No, they don't. They don't overlap. Of course, I'm biased, so I'm going to tell you that HIFU is far superior than cryo. There are some major differences. Cryo is not as precise as HIFU in terms of size of the necrosis. It's quite difficult when you're doing a cryotherapy to see exactly the extent of the ice ball. And the other part is cryo is a needle base, so you really need to stick the needle at the right position inside the prostate. Having said that, for tumors that are located in the interior part of the prostate and are, I would say, fairly far away from the neurovascular bundles, from the rectum, from the sphincter, I think cryo works very well in this. I would not use cryo for whole gland ablation, typically. There's been series historically of whole gland cryo that led to very high rates of impotence, mm-hmm. because of the reason why I was telling you, it's very difficult to know the extent of the ice ball. So to make sure they were destroying the whole prostate, they were freezing the neurovascular bundles 90% of the time, which were leading to this high rate of erectile dysfunction. For everything else, so all the tumors in the posterior lateral, I would use HIFU for sure. Once again, those little limitations that we discussed earlier with the calcification, if you don't want to do TURP, if you have a calcification in the area, you can do a cryo. Or you have, like what I said earlier, very, very large prostate and a tumor that is more in the interior part of the prostate. I would say more than 3.5 or 4 centimeters from the rectum. There again, cryo would be a good option.
Gotcha. And let's go back to that patient that had that 80 gram prostate where we wanted to do a TURP 3 months beforehand before we did HIFU. For cryotherapy, would we be able to do cryotherapy right at the beginning without doing a TURP, or is that something where you'd also have to resect the prostate?
No, you could do a cryotherapy. You could do a cryotherapy right there, assuming the patient doesn't have any BPH symptom, which sometimes with an 80 gram prostate is a bit challenging, but still. So assuming the patient doesn't have any BPH symptoms, it doesn't require any BPH intervention. You could stick a cryo a couple of cryo probes, cryo needles in there, and freeze that interior portion of that large prostate and see how it goes. During the cryo procedure, you always insert a urethral warmer
to
protect the urethra. Also, so there's a chance he will, if he's not symptomatic before, that he won't be symptomatic. With large prostate like this, there's also a chance it will present some obstruction, urinary obstruction a few weeks down the road.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate you comparing those two. It's helpful when we're looking at these, you know, more widespread therapies about how to distinguish one from another and what patient populations would work best for each.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm sure I don't want to say a bad thing about like irreversible electroporation, for example. But it's in a very early stage. It's a needle based. You just have to stick needles. I think they're closer to the indication of cryo. I think IRE laser. They have more similar indications. So anterior tumors as the cryo.
Gotcha.
For posterior tumors, HIFU seems to be the standard, pretty much accepted everywhere now.
Gotcha. So moving on to cost. So I was reading a little bit about this, and it seems like the long-term cost of this is poorly understood currently, just because it's tough to know if you're going to have retreatment with another HIFU or if you're ultimately going to end up advancing that requires radical intervention. So could you talk a little bit about the cost of this therapy and what you're predicting it's going to be in the future?
What do you mean the cost? Sorry.
I guess like the cost burden for the patient or just the medical system at hand of doing this versus active surveillance or doing this versus radical prostatectomy right off the bat.
Yeah, it's a very good question. There's been a few studies in the UK made on this to try to use what they call CALI, quality of life years, to compare the various strategies. I'm not sure they apply to the US really, because the system is very, very different. Up to this year, a lot of patients who elected HIFU had to pay out of pocket. And as I mentioned earlier, this is changing dramatically. Now there is a CPT code that is available. So Medicare starts to pay for the procedure, which is less expensive than a radical prostatectomy. Some private insurances start to cover also the procedure. So it's going to be made available to a wide range of patients. I saw recently a publication that seemed to conclude that out of the various, they didn't look at HIFU, but out of the various procedures for prostate cancer, the longitudinal cost of radiotherapy was by far superior, and active surveillance and radical prostatectomy seem to be in the same ballpark.
Okay. So is there certain patients where it's easier to get this covered by insurance than others? I could see an insurance company having issue with, you know, a Gleason 8, a 4+4 undergoing HIFU and being like, well, we don't know if it's going to advance and you might have to do a radical prostatectomy anyway down the road. Why don't you just do a radical prostatectomy now? So is there certain patients where it's more challenging to get this covered, or is it pretty well covered when you're using this code?
So it's a case by case basis. Having said that, the patients that are treated with HIFU after a failure of an initial radiotherapy are automatically covered by Medicare, by Cigna, by Aetna, because it's part of the NCCN guidelines.
Okay, so salvage therapy is covered.
Yeah, so salvage therapy is automatically paid pretty much everywhere. Maybe not by Blue Cross Blue Shield yet, because they're always the last to cover anything. but anyway, this part is covered. And for first line therapy, it's still on a case by case basis. It's a little bit too early for me to give you an idea. It will take a few months till we have data on how many claims have been paid and how many claims have been denied for primary therapy, and what criteria have been used by the insurance company to deny it. So we'll see. We'll see soon. I think your point is valid, that some medical directors from insurance company might challenge the treatment of a with HIFU of a high grade tumor, or the treatment of a very low grade tumor, which according to all the guidelines should not be treated at all. Should just be watching their active surveillance.
Right. So when it strays, what I hear you saying is there's a little bit of a question mark when it strays from guidelines.
Yeah.
About whether this is going to be covered or not. We'll have to take a look in 6 months or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, that was the majority of my questions. Is there anything else that I didn't ask about or didn't cover that you'd like to talk about?
No, I think it's pretty clear. I think we discussed pretty much everything. We talked a little bit about MRI and MRI fusion. I think that's also an important thing of the technology. In the last iteration of our technology in the Focal One, we included the possibility of doing a MRI fusion with the real-time ultrasound inside the machine. So the same way you can use MRI fusion to guide biopsies today, you use MRI fusion to guide your HIFU treatment with Focal One, which also makes the technology go further and further in a more customized and more tailored procedure for every patient.
So, what kind of improvement have you seen with fusion added into this HIFU procedure?
So you get more confidence from the user that is doing what he needs to. The downside of this, when we started in Europe a few years ago offering MRI fusion, it was so beautiful and so exciting that some urologists started to treat only what they saw on the MRI, and that was before the publications that came out and told and explained that what you see on the MRI is an underestimation of the actual size of the tumor. So since then, they've learned to add some safety margin around the MRI picture.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you for going over that. Is there anything else, or are we good?
No, I think it's good. I mean, there are more and more Focal Ones in the top academic centers here in the U.S. So I think this is going to be introduced in more and more fellows and students in the country that will be able to learn this and learn the basics of the technology and also where it fits in the prostate cancer spectrum. Which is
Gotcha.
At the end of the day what you guys really want to know, what to use on which patients.
And I guess this brings up another question for me. So, I don't think we have a HIFU at the residency program that I'll be attending. So let's say, for example, I go through residency and I graduate and I become an attending at some hospital that has HIFU. What is the process of learning how to do it once out in practice, if you haven't had exposure to it during your training?
Yeah, so there is a fairly simple training program, so you can always go through a online didactics. There's an e-learning platform that allows you to learn really the basics of the technology, and then you always have a proctor. Let's say you're an attending physician, an attending urologist, you want to start doing HIFU. The first treatments you'll do will have to be under the supervision of a proctor, so a urologist that is a specialist that have done at least 30 treatments himself or herself, and will be able to teach you for a few cases. And after that, we provide application engineers, so clinical application specialists, to sit by the physician to help him or her learn a little bit more the specifics of the machine on the various patient types.
Gotcha. And what's the learning curve? You said 30 if you're gonna help someone else learn it, but for yourself, learning how to do it, is it also 30 learning curve or what?
No, it's very quick to pick it up. So after I would say 4 or 5 patients, you already feel very comfortable with it. You continue learning, as I said, since it's a very tailored treatment. All the treatments are different. So you're going to continue learning, but 10 cases is the basic learning curve. After 10 cases, you completely, you're completely autonomous and independent.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you so much. Again, for the listeners, this is Hugo Embert, the Chief Marketing Officer at EDAP TMS for Focal One HIFU, High Intensity Focused Ultrasound. Again, thank you, Hugo, for joining me on this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Parker.
All right. And for all my listeners, I hope you're doing well and staying safe, and take care.